Medford is one of the largest cities in our broadcast region, and like any city of reasonable size, it has had issues accommodating a population of homeless people in recent years. Camping tents are highly visible in a drive up Interstate 5 between Medford's two freeway exits. The city council acted recently and passed a prohibited camping ordinance laying out where and when and how people can sleep or camp outside. Two major features: no camping in greenways during fire season and no tents on public property. Use of a tent can lead to a misdemeanor citation. We'll examine the issue in two passes. Advocates for homeless people will join us in half an hour. Right now, we welcome Kevin Stein, a Medford City Council member who did vote yes on a 6-2 vote. Kevin Stein, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Kelly Matting from staff is with us as well, a deputy city manager of the city of Medford. Welcome, Kelly.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
So, Kevin, let's start with you. Where did the ordinance originate? What is the need that's being addressed here?
Yeah, so as we're all aware of the Boise ordinance, the federal case that dramatically impacted what cities can and cannot do related to actions for people that might be living outside. So with that, you know, we had an ordinance on the books just, probably the majority of cities have very similar ordinances related to sleeping and lying down and how that can be a violation. So Medford's had this on the books since like 1988. And, you know, with that, part of this ordinance is getting rid of that. But looking at what can be done for public safety.
Pause for a second here. Are you saying that because of the knowledge out there of the lawsuits that something had changed in the way people were camping in Medford?
So our city attorney staff looked at our current ordinance and determined that what we had on the books was in violation of the Boise case.
Okay. So separate conversation here about the restoration of the burned areas of the Greenway. I know that is, you know, the Greenway camping is banned in this ordinance. Steve Lambert from the county said the use of the Greenway is different in Medford due to people avoiding it, was what he had said.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that happening?
Yeah. I mean, I took a jog on it myself just a couple weeks ago, and you can understand why people are going to want to avoid it. You see the trash. You see, it's just negative, and it shouldn't be a negative. It should be a positive. It's a, you know, otherwise it could be a beautiful area for families. We have people that gave us plenty of emails saying back when, you know, years ago, they were able to take their children there, or they went there as kids, and they want to take their children, and they don't feel safe doing so. And that should not be a part of Medford where people feel unsafe utilizing a otherwise beautiful and positive area. It's just not that right now.
Now, Councillor Stein, I have seen in letters to the editor and other forums a sentiment to get the homeless out of town. Is that what this ordinance is set up to do?
No. You know, there's some conspiratorial stuff about how this is going to help build a jail. I don't understand how that even gets to that point. But if you look at it from what this is, which is a public safety issue, in 2020, we had 220 fires on the Greenway. We have a large amount of trash that goes into Bear Creek. So those that have environmental concerns and care about our Bear Creek should see this as a positive. Those are the things that we're going after, is trying to have a betterment of those issues. We have... and I mentioned this before, you know, there's a retirement community and other housing that's right off the Greenway, and they are in danger of having their houses burn up from these fires that are occurring on the Greenway. And this is something that is unacceptable, and this is something that helps us get to a point where that's less of an issue.
Kelly Matting, Deputy City Manager of Medford, how different is the wording and how tricky was it to word this ordinance given the court decisions out there in the Boise case mentioned, Boise versus Martin, and in addition to that, Blake versus Grants Pass?
You know, I don't think it was that difficult. I think what like Councillor Stein said, what we were looking at is working with those two court cases and looking at the situation in Medford. You know, our deputy city attorney worked with the Oregon Law Center and worked with other cities on putting this together. We worked on that because we expected Tina Kotek's legislation to pass that gives cities the right to regulate time, place, and manner. And so I think we were looking, we coordinated with a variety of agencies and other cities and trying to comply with what we thought would become the law. And I think we've done that.
Well, those cases identify adequate alternatives for people, alternatives to camping, to staying outside. And what are those alternatives in Medford?
So, you know, over a year ago, the city opened up, or actually it's not a year, over a year ago, I think it opened up in July, opened up an urban campground in coordination with Rogue Retreat. Rogue Retreat actually operates that campground. There are about 60 sites there, and Rogue Retreat is looking at doubling that campground. In fact, that'll come to the council for review Thursday. And so we're looking at doubling the size of that campground to about 120. There's also the Kelly Shelter. And I think there is sort of this urban myth that's been started that there aren't any vacancies at any of these places, that there are years wait at these places, and it's simply not true. In fact, on Friday when the city put on a resource fair, they took about 8 people to the campground. We have vacancy at the campground. There is vacancy there. There's vacancy at the Kelly Shelter. Those are low barrier shelters, especially the campground.
So, Kelly Matting, you were talking about the urban campground. I mean, does it seem like another 60 spaces would be enough to handle all the people out there who have been camping?
You know, I don't know. What I know is there have been vacancies and there continue to be people camping on the Greenway.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if there's a correlation between vacancies and people camping on the Greenway or the number. We offer that campground and people either decide to take it or they don't. And I think right now most people aren't. But I did want to turn it over to Councillor Stein because I want him to talk about some of the other things that we're doing, Jeffrey, because the city has been and continues to be very involved in providing services for the unhoused. So,
if you don't mind. So, I mean, one of the phrasing you had is how you're going to have two other people that are advocates for the homeless. Well, I'm an advocate for the homeless. Okay, I'm on the city council and I'm an advocate for the homeless. I worked housing homeless veterans, not just as a do it, but I did it as a living, working for Access. So the idea that the government here is only against the homeless or something is preposterous. As a city councilor in my time here, you know, I helped get Hope Village done. I helped get this urban campground done. I am an advocate for the indoor shelter. I'm an advocate for the $2.5 million that we're going to get from the state to open a navigation center for homeless people to go to and get services. So, some of the, I think, misinformation that we get from some of these folks is that we're not doing anything, that all we care about is policing. And that couldn't be further from the truth. Based on the facts of all the time and money that we are spending to try to get people that are homeless in Medford connected to services.
And in fact, let me jump ahead to that question, because there was a resource fair at Hawthorne Park in Medford on Friday, which was intended to bring this to the public. How did that go, Kevin?
The information we have is people showed up, people could go, they could get vaccinations, and they could get connected to services. To be honest, the turnout was not as good as we hoped.
Mm-hmm.
you know, if we have hundreds of people potentially in Medford, there should be more people going to these. And unfortunately, that's just not the case. And I can't speak to the specifics on why that is, but you know, we're trying. You know, we are providing, but we can't force anyone to do anything, right? We can't force anyone to accept going to the campground. We can't force anyone to accept some of the other services that are out there. And that's unfortunate. But we're going to keep trying. We're going to keep providing services, and we're going to try to help with the upward mobility of people that are living outside in Medford.
Let's talk about the two specifics we mentioned, Greenway Camping and tents. On the Greenway, basically, what is it, May 1st? Is that when you've decreed that there won't be any camping on the Greenway, period?
Well, all right, it's a lighter touch than that. So it's not on May 1st, the calendar changes, and all of a sudden, you know, there's no more people camping on the Greenway. That's just not how it is. This is more of a light touch. So police are going to go out there with, you know, services and, again, try to get people to go to things like the urban campground. There's going to be, you know, notice. So there's 72 hours notice that has to be posted. And then, you know, just on the Greenway itself, not everyone is the same, right? When I worked at Access Housing Homeless Veterans, when you talk to someone, everyone has a different story, right? So just the visual, you see some people that have like cleaner campgrounds, and then you have people that are there on Bear Creek and they're just throwing their trash in there. So there's, you know, there's different categories, and with that, you know, the policing actions of that will be different.
Randy and Roosh sent in an email, says, I'm wondering if there is any work being done regarding homeless veterans camping in the Greenway. There are programs available for veterans and a workforce dedicated to working with that community. Kevin Stein, have you had an opportunity to connect people with those services?
Yeah, when I worked at Access, I worked under the program to do that, and we actually worked with Medford Police when they would go out there. And so there was actually some people that were living out there that I talked to them, veteran to veteran, gave him my card, and I actually housed some veterans out there based on having that person-to-person contact. And that still goes on today with especially the livability team having the close connection with the different veteran programs, whether it be the VA or the, it's called the SSVF program, Supportive Services for Veterans and Families. Mm-hmm. So that stuff still, those programs still happen today.
Kevin Stein is a Medford City Council member, voted for the prohibited camping ordinance on April 2nd. Kelly Madding is a city staffer, deputy city manager. We do have some people who are speaking against the ordinance coming up in a few minutes here on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join this conversation now at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Mark in Merlin is on the phone. Welcome to the Exchange.
Good morning. When I was attending SCU, we had an associate professor, Wesley Leonard, who put up collaborative models of trying to manage very difficult situations. And so all the stakeholders seem to have been represented in various different ways, especially it sounds like you're getting feedback from the police department in Medford, which is great. But I'm wondering if there is any advocate for the actual people who are homeless, who are camping out, so that they become an equal partner, an equal stakeholder in coming up with solutions to the given problem.
All right. Thanks for that, Mark. Kelly Madding, what can you say about that?
You know, when we were, when staff was putting together this ordinance, the council asked staff to take it out to the advocates primarily. And so this ordinance went out to the Homeless Task Force and a variety of other groups to get feedback. And actually, that feedback was borne out in the ordinance that the council adopted. The first ordinance that was put forward was amended, and it was amended based on what feedback we got. So we got feedback from the advocates and there are people with lived experience on our Community Development Commission working on the city's Homeless System Action Plan.
All right. Another call here from Mickey in Phoenix. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much. I have been to the urban campground. I was there with the Gideons, and this was about a year ago when we sang, and that place is a disgrace. And I don't want to be negative about it, but I just want to give you some of my background. I moved from the Bay Area. I have a master's degree in music, and I have a very high IQ. And when I got to Reno, Nevada, I participated in the homeless problem. And from 1989 to 1996, we helped over 7,000 people into housing and into jobs, number one in the United States. And the reason is, I said to the city council eventually, I'm in business to put myself out of business. I don't even use the word shelter. And the things that we're doing right now, and I warned McComas about this because I've known him for a long time, you're duplicating what's happened in Portland. And I just read an article called The Demise of Portland. So I don't want to be negative about anything, but I have a plan that I think will solve this problem. So I would like to be a part of the homeless task force. I like what Mark just said about Merlin. You know, sometimes you forget that these people had a life at one time. You don't know why they're out on the streets, but they are out on the streets. This is not a big problem here. In Reno right now, we probably have 10, 12,000 homeless people, and they're not very happy about it, and so they're very disruptive. In Portland, you already know what's going on there. And in San Francisco, there's 50,000. Mm-hmm. So we have a workable group of people here. We have small towns, and we have wonderful people here. So if anybody would like to get in touch with me, my name is Mickey Lufkin, and I'm a pastor and a professional violinist, and I'm and can I give my phone number?
Do you have an email address you can give?
Oh, yeah, that's even better. It's violinmaster7777@gmail.com.
So four sevens?
Yes.
Violinmaster7777@gmail.com. Okay, we'll put this up on our website as well. Mickey, thank you for that. I hope people take you up on your offer. Kevin Stein, to his point about the urban campground being not a particularly desirable place, it would seem to be different from the kinds of places people would choose for themselves.
I'm not sure I follow.
Well, what have you provided at the urban campground in the way of services? I mean, is it a parking lot, a dusty parking lot, something like that? What is it?
Oh, no. So it has, if you're on the greenway in a tent, you're going to have a much better environment than being on the urban campground in a tent or one of the other shelters they have there. So I'm not quite sure how I follow that. There's bark down, so it's not all. I mean, I heard one thing that it's all muddy. That's not true at all. As Kelly mentioned, this is a low barrier. So this is not, oh, man, I am taking drugs. I can't go there. That's actually not true. You mm-hmm. can't have it on the premises, but if someone were to have an issue that they're dealing with, such as drug and alcohol abuse, as long as they're not taking it onto the campground and as long as they're not being negative towards the other people there, then they can utilize that shelter.
All right. We haven't talked about the tents provision in this. Kelly Madden, can you lay out what the ordinance says about it says structure camping, but let's talk about what that means.
You know, it basically means that you can't have a tent on private property. There's a whole list of places where you can't have a tent. I will tell you this, though. The city council has directed staff to look at, and the ordinance changed a little bit, and this was because of talking to advocates of the city actually trying to find possibly land for camping in the winter or opening the city working with nonprofits or the faith community to open a winter shelter. So what it says is that basically there's no structure camping, but I think what the council intended was for staff to look at what kind of provisions we could enable coming up into the winter.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, but is tents just out? I mean, on public property, on private property, tents are okay. Is that right?
So, right. If you have a situation where you have asked someone or someone has come onto your property and they want to live in a tent, they can.
All right. So it's the public property we're talking about. And then there's additional stuff about public property here. I'm looking at subsection 3 about placing bedding materials on sidewalk, street, bridge, viaduct, et cetera, not for 24 hours consecutively. So can people sleep under a bridge for the night and then move on?
Yeah, and that goes back to what we talked about before, how for the first time since 1988, you can sleep outside. So as long as people are, you know, not continually just staying in one location, then that is allowed in a way that it hasn't been done before.
Now, when we talk about the greenway and the need to keep people off of there, now what about places that are near the creek but not actually greenway, like that zone along the freeway north of Little League Field, south of 12th Street?
I'd have to look at the map, but essentially it's a park zone. So the greenway is designated in a way on certain GIS maps, so it'd be within those borders. I can't speak to the specific area you're talking about just because I don't have that data on hand.
It's just off to the right of the freeway as you head north of Barnett Road, and it's a very visible place. I mean, you can see lots of tents there now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can't give you the plus or minus because I just don't know. I would assume so, but I'm unsure, so I don't want to say definitively on that.
All right, Kelly Manning, is there a discussion with the police department about the date of enaction of the ordinance, about getting out there and telling people, hey, it's, you know, it's time to go. This is no longer legal.
Well, I think the police, the livability team, has been letting people know about the ordinance and kind of some timing. We are looking at starting around the 1st of May. And I say around because if the state fire marshal determines that fire season starts earlier, which they could do, given that, like you said before, there's not a lot of rain on the horizon, then we might look at something earlier. But right now, we're looking to start in May. And like Councillor Stein said, it's going to be starting slow with a light hand. But we want to let people know that there are other places for them to go and camp right now if they want to take advantage of it and move before the police notice their camps, ideally.
So we have an email here from Kevin in Ashland who says there's a huge part of the problem you're not touching whatsoever. Oregon is at the bottom nationally in effective provision of mental health services. We're in 51st place nationally, and it includes Washington, D.C., in adult mental health spending per capita. This is a huge barrier to solving this problem. Kevin from Ashland says the city of Medford has not made any reasonable efforts to solve this unavailability of mental health services. Councillor Kevin Stein, what do you say?
Well, the unfortunate truth is cities and Oregon are not social service agencies. So if you live in Jackson County, then the agencies are All Care and Jackson Care Connect that provide mental health services, along with the county doing some of that. We have no control over any of the way that they utilize their funding. And I've seen those statistics before. It's unfortunate. That we're so low, especially from a state that considers itself progressive. I'm not going to push back on that because it's true. But the city of Medford is not a social service agency. We do not, nor does probably any other city in Oregon provide those types of health care and mental health services.
Kelly Manning, we're down to our last 30 seconds or so with you before the break hits. To combine the two sections about greenway versus tent camping, can people camp on the greenway without a tent?
Not after May 1st.
All right, so the fire season provision is in there.
So can I get one quick thing in, Jeff?
Yeah, you got about 20 seconds.
I'll use my 10 seconds wisely. So the big takeaway I want some people to get is that the city of Medford is not an enforcement-only agency. I think some of the people that are speaking after me might say that. I'd also want people to understand that we have a very big piece of the pie in terms of the types of things we're doing to connect homeless people to services. You could say it's not enough, and that's fine. But the some of the concepts out here that we are doing absolutely nothing is false.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we continually provide more services, just like on this Thursday.
Okay, Kevin Stein, Kelly Manning, we are out of time. Thank you for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. Continuing a discussion of the City of Medford's efforts to accommodate and regulate camping by homeless people, the City Council acted recently and passed a prohibited camping ordinance laying out where and when and how people can sleep or camp outside. Two major features: no camping in greenways during fire season and no tents on public property. Use of a tent can lead to a misdemeanor citation. We heard from City Council member Kevin Stein and City staffer Kelly Manning just a few moments ago. Right now, we are joined by Emily Mann, an advocate for homeless people at the Housing Justice Alliance. Welcome, Emily.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you. Justin Rosas is with us as well, a lawyer who advocates for homeless people. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you very much for having me. It's good to be here.
Okay. Good to hear from you both. Justin, let's start with you, because you had threatened to sue the city over the ordinance. What are the complaints about it, and have you done so?
Yeah, we are in the process of filing a 1983 lawsuit in federal court against the city for passing this ordinance, and honestly, for its existing scheme. This is a humanitarian crisis, and we cannot use jail or incarceration or police force to solve it. Currently, we incarcerate the largest number of people in the history of the world as a nation, and we over-criminalize problems that we need to address in different, more humane ways. This statute, this ordinance, and the City of Medford's treatment of the unhoused flies directly in the face of Boise versus Martin and Blake versus Grants Pass. And not only that, it fails to address the fundamental problem here. Just quoting from Blake versus Grants Pass, laws that punish people because they are unhoused and have no other place to go undermine cities' ability to fulfill their basic obligations. Enforcement of such quality of life laws does nothing to cure the homelessness crisis in this country. Arresting the homeless is almost never an adequate solution because, apart from the constitutional impediments, it's expensive, not rehabilitating, often a waste of limited public resources, and does nothing to serve those homeless individuals who suffer from mental illness and substance abuse addiction. And just lastly, quoting from that, quality of life laws erode the little trust that remains between the homeless individuals and law enforcement officials. And so when I hear Mr. Stein talk about the fact that turnout is less than they believe at a resource fair that happens the week after six city councilors vote to criminalize poverty in our community, I wonder why is he not seeing the disconnect? So they are eroding faith in our city and in our laws and in the process that we would use to get at these basic problems. And, further, we don't believe the city is an enforcement-only agency, but to hear in the same breath that the city is not a social service agency, and then discuss criminalization of poverty and camping without any real solutions, it's sad to see, and it's something that we expect the court to correct.
Emily Mann, let's get your take, and if you would, give us a sketch of the Housing Justice Alliance and what its general run of work is, and then how it's been responding to the ordinance.
So the Housing Justice Alliance is a coalition of community members, folks that work for organizations in Medford and Jackson County. And we formed in direct response to City Council's passing of this ordinance. So a lot of us are pretty invested in the unhoused community in Medford. I work for the Southern Oregon Coalition for Racial Equity. We provide a free meal daily at Hawthorne Park. And so we serve a lot of the folks that are going to be affected by this ordinance. I think some of our primary issues with this ordinance is, you know, echoing what Justin said. I mean, this is a humanitarian issue, right? If we are not providing social services, we're not providing shelter beds for folks that are going to be displaced because of this ordinance, we're not really giving people adequate options. And so that's what we're calling for, right? If the city cannot provide adequate shelter beds for everybody currently sheltering along the Greenway, we need to come up with some alternatives, and we need to do that quickly. Incarceration is not going to change the issue in Medford. It's only going to suck people into this endless cycle of incarceration and poverty with these criminal records that can make it almost impossible to find housing. It can make it more difficult to access services in the future. It really is just this revolving door once you enter into the criminal justice system. So if we can stop that where it starts and intervene with real solutions, you know, that's what I think most community members and taxpayers would want to see happen.
You probably heard the argument made by, I believe it was Kelly Matting, Medford's deputy city manager, that there are vacancies in some of these places like the urban campground. I don't know if she said the Kelly shelter has vacancies, but she did say the urban campground. I mean, is there space for the people who are currently camping right now to be someplace that is designated as an official place for them to be?
Absolutely not. I mean, there are often vacancies at the urban campground. They are generally 10 or less per day. And we know that there are hundreds of people sheltering in tents in the city of Medford right now. So even if they wanted to access those services, it's extremely limited. I will also say a big issue with the urban campground, while I appreciate a lot of aspects of the urban campground and believe it is probably the most low barrier shelter available right now, you still have to go through a referral system with a Medford police officer. And, you know, I can't blame anybody who's not interested in initiating that relationship just due to kind of the history that the Medford police have with the unhoused community and the tension and the trauma associated with those relationships. You know, you can't blame someone for not wanting to get into a car with a cop to access those services.
So what kind of situation, both in terms of physical infrastructure and pathways to obtain that infrastructure, are needed to achieve the ends of both sets of people, those who don't want to see the campers along the Greenway and those who don't particularly want to camp on the Greenway?
Well, I'll take a bite of...
Go ahead, Emily. Justin and then Emily.
Yeah, I mean, I think I want to echo what Emily said about the spaces. You know, we have an Excel spreadsheet, and we've been calling the various shelters for a long time. The Kelly shelter has a very long wait. The urban campground sometimes has availability, and sometimes it does not. It's sort of people moving in and moving out. And to answer this question, I really think it's obvious that we need more low-barrier shelters first. I mean, I think that is a serious problem in Jackson County and really a serious problem throughout our region. So it's got to start there. A CAHOOTS model that takes away law enforcement and instead substitutes social services for interactions with people that are unhoused and maybe in crisis is an obvious step, a cheaper step that is more effective. Once you start to build that sort of structure, you can talk about how to do upward mobility in housing and try to really reconnect people and do vocational rehabilitation, et cetera. But we've got to begin there, and I would love to hear what Emily has to add.
Yeah, go ahead, Emily.
Yeah. So I have very similar feelings. I mean, I do think that there is a huge issue of just land access in Medford generally. Anybody here, I think, has to recognize that we do have a land and housing crisis right now. It's also the issue of getting things like this approved by community members. I think often there's a lot of pushback to opening shelters and services for the unhoused community because there's a lot of stigma and a lot of misinformation surrounding those things. So really what this needs to be is a public education campaign, right? We need to, you know, humanize this community to the larger group of folks living in Medford that may not understand or may have fears associated with those services being in their neighborhoods.
You know, I'll repeat what I said to the previous guests who were on the for the ordinance side. The fact that you see the letters to the editor that indicate that there's a get the bums out kind of feeling, and so this would seem to indicate you've got a bit of ground to cover in the education campaign you talk about, Emily.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I encourage anybody who's unsure or anybody who feels nervous interacting with the unhoused community to make a good faith effort to reach out to some of those folks. You know, we interact with the unhoused community on a personal level day to day. And I have to say, I don't fear walking along the Greenway. I have no issue being out there early in the morning, late at night, going by myself, making contact with folks at their campsites. And it's because I have that personal interaction and that experience with folks. And I think if more people had those personal interactions to draw on, there would be a lot less stigma and fear.
Let's take a call from Sheldon in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Emily Mann and Justin Rosas.
Hello, Jeffrey. I don't know, you might remember me, Sheldon Snow.
Sounds familiar.
Back in the early 90s, I started an organization there called the Southern Oregon Alliance. And we were helping the homeless. That's back when you were still with Channel 12, as a matter of fact.
Yep.
But one of the things that bothers me is addressing people who are like me. I was homeless in the Rogue Valley, houseless, whatever you want to call it, from 1983 until 1990, but it was by choice. And me and some other folks, and we kept a clean camp, but the problem always was is that we were out of town, we were in the county, but if you go into town, every time you go into town, you go off the Greenway to have a cigarette or something, and the police would come down and give you a trespassing ticket, and basically it's a get-out-of-town ticket. A lot of people don't bother to go to court, but we would, and it never lasted, never stood. But my point is that the cycle of the way things go is that it's all of a sudden there's all this attention about the homeless, and then it drops, and there's none. Then it goes back up, there's all this attention. Then it goes back down, and there's none. And it's never ending. And as far as people wanting to go and stay in a campground, I don't know the rules and regulations there. But if you're out there by choice, the last thing you want to do is go stay with a bunch of people you don't know and under circumstances that you don't care about and under other people's rules. And nobody addresses that situation.
Okay, Sheldon, I thank you for that. We're running out of time, and I want to get a response first from Justin.
Yeah, I have defended about 1,700 unhoused people over the course of my career, and I hear that a lot. And I think that's why it has to be the lowest barrier possible. And obviously there has to be some understanding for people who are going to be living outside of the rule, outside of the campground regardless. So I hear that often, and I think it goes back to some of what Emily was saying. I mean, the lawsuit is here to correct the unconstitutionality of this statute, but we need a sea change of perception in our society where people reconnect. We cannot have a world where we just shove people around, treat them like they don't exist, and feel like we're really making progress as a community. So I hear that often, and I think that's why Boise really calls for the idea of having the lowest barrier shelters possible, giving people space to be themselves and work through issues, and then, obviously having a light touch rather than a prosecutorial touch in trying to manage the situation.
Emily, baby steps to counter the fear you were talking about that people feel about people who they see camping out. What to do? How to begin to broach that barrier? Breach that barrier?
Yeah, I mean, I encourage anybody who feels hesitant about contacting and building relationships with unhoused folks, to get involved with local organizations that work with those people. So Equity does a free meal serve every day at Hawthorne Park. The unhoused community is a big portion of folks that we serve there. I would encourage anybody to shoot me an email, come get involved, pick up a shift once or twice a week. I think that it changes people's perception really quickly when they're actually having these one-on-one connections and these conversations and recognizing that a lot of folks that are living outside right now are in situations that are not drastically different from the ones that we experience day to day. I think a lot of folks try to avoid the idea that we're all probably one or two paychecks away from being homeless ourselves, and kind of grounding yourself in that reality and really helps shift opinion, and getting those experiences and building those relationships goes a long ways in breaking the stigma.
Are you comfortable giving an email address over the air?
Yeah, for sure. So my email address is emily.man@soequity.org. We're always looking for folks to fill shifts. It's a 3-hour shift. We just pass out meals and mm-hmm. build community and have great conversations with folks.
Okay. We will put this up. I want to thank everybody for taking part in the discussion. Kelly Matting and Kevin Stein in the first part of the hour. Emily Mann and Justice Roses now. Kelly Matting said there are 6 vacancies at the Kelly Shelter and 14 tents, 1 pallet shelter at the Urban Campground.